What's up, my mentees? Welcome to another episode of Mentors Collective. As you know, there's a lot of different businesses out there that you can start. Sometimes it's intimidating looking at all of the different companies around you. Every product that you consume was sold to you by somebody. So I like to bring some people onto the show so I can learn a little bit about these different industries. Maybe it'll be right for you. Who knows? So on this one, we're going to be diving into consumer electronics with one of the masters in the space who has grew a company to $50 million per year in revenue. So I'm guessing that we're not just going to learn a lot about consumer electronics, but we're going to learn a lot about scaling a business, growing a company, and turning it into a monster that that Kirk has here. So without further ado, I want to welcome my guest for today, Kirk Feller. He's the president and CEO at Bodyguards, which is a consumer electronics and computers retail company. He's got 61 employees. He's been doing this for 20 years. He's been high up in marketing, and now he has over $50 million in revenue. So we've got a lot to learn. So I'm excited to dive into this with you, Kirk. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Pleasure to be here.
And Kirk, you've been in the business for 20 years. You've grown a huge company. $50 million is a massive number for everybody listening. So I'd love to start kind of from the beginning. Like, how did you choose consumer electronics? And I'm sure you've seen the sector evolve a lot. So I'd love to hear about what it was like when you got into it versus what the industry is like right now.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. I didn't start out by thinking, hey, I need to get into, you know, mobile phones are going to be huge. That wasn't the case. I wish I was that smart. It just wasn't the case at the time. This was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you know, we were talking about PDAs and, you know, Palm Pilots and car phones. We didn't even have a mobile device that we held in our hands other than a really super big brick that Motorola made. And so this was in the early days, and I actually got into the company originally by, I was working with a company that was in the speech world, speech technology. So speaking to your device or to your, you know, your television or to your Xbox, the company I was with was actually the first voice of Xbox, which was Call of Duty. So we were really early on in speech technology, and then of course it could, to read text and those types of things back to you. But I had gone out and actually searched for a way to get speech technology in the hands of consumers. Consumers were very, you know, opposed to actually speaking to their device. You didn't speak in your car. You kind of looked kind of nuts if you were speaking, talking to yourself. There's a lot of things that people weren't at that time quite aware of. And it's interesting to think that was only 20 years ago. So anyway, one thing led to another, and I went and decided to acquire this screen protector company with the intent to put our speech technology in a CD-ROM back then and put it in this screen protector packaging and have people try it for 30 days, and hopefully they would adopt it and buy our software. So one thing led to another, and the actual voice technology company really struggled. And I went for about 6 months without receiving a salary. And I was an executive of that company. And I finally just told the guys, hey, I need to bounce here. And they ended up giving me this little screen protector company. And it literally had zero revenue. But my history was being in the channel. I had worked with companies like WordPerfect and Novell early on the days in software, and worked with, you know, Home Depot, Office Max, those types of companies, Staples, at the time, CompUSA. So my expertise was in the retail channel and the consumer side. And so they gave me this little screen protector company, and that's what we have today. That's the company that exists today. That was 20 years ago. So that's how I got into it. Now, once I got into it, obviously, I started to learn the industry and figure out, you know, how do we make screen protectors for, you know, different types of devices, not just Palm Pilots.
An entrepreneurial lesson in there, probably a couple. One, you worked for a long time with no salary and not on your own company, right? You were working with other people on a company that didn't belong to you. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, why? What incentivized you to do that
and to keep doing it? Yeah, I really believed in the technology. And then, you know, once I had this screen protector thing, I wish I could say that I knew that Apple was going to come out with an iPhone. That wasn't for four years later. right? I wish I could say I was that smart. I just wasn't. But I knew that the direction that technology was going and that the screen protectors had a place. And so we started doing custom screen protectors. The first phones we saw coming out were these flip phones. And I don't know if you remember that. You're not old enough to.
I had a flip phone. I had the Razor back in the day. The
Razor was one of our big sellers. I mean, it had a curved screen.
Popular phone.
Yeah, it was one of the first phones that actually wasn't just a square, display. It actually started to curve, and we had some personality in these devices. And so we started attacking this custom cut screen protector market. And so innovation from the very beginning was very important to us. And then we started learning, okay, we could use different types of materials. Screen protectors, when we started, were only these little vinyl things. And the best thing for me to get people to understand what it is when you go get your oil changed, they put up there that little vinyl thing that says your next oil change is in so many days or whatever. That's exactly the material that was being used for screen protectors at the time. And so we went out and worked with some people that were experts in these types of materials and found new materials that we could use. And eventually, in 2006, that was the big deal. That's when this little new iPhone came out. And this is the original one.
That looks like an old iPhone.
Yeah, it is. This is the original iPhone right here.
Wow.
I mean, look at the beauty of this thing, how big it is. I mean,
I am going to mark this part of the episode and use this as that's crazy. For those listening, he's holding up what looks like an ancient relic. It's got one tiny little camera on the back. It's amazing how far technology has come. I'm sure you know better than anyone. Yeah, it's such a cool little thing. And I like, you should frame that. It's going to be worth a lot of money one day. So it sounds like you saw this industry and where it was going. You knew it really well. You decided to kind of go all in, come on board to the screen protector company. It ended up, because of timing, likely not doing as well as you may have anticipated. Now I'd like to talk for a minute about this transition from you're working for free and now they're giving you this company. That's something that sounds probably foreign to me and foreign to a lot of other people. Like what transpired in that time to cause that series of events to happen?
Yeah, I was making a good salary back then. And I was an executive of this company. It was a publicly traded company. And so, I had a good 401k. I had, some investments and I was in a good position. This wasn't my first company to start. I had my own company about 4 years prior to this. And so I had some experience at least and confidence in knowing that, I think I can do this. It wasn't just like I was thrown into this and this is the only thing I had an opportunity to do. Right. So yeah, it was a really tough time. I mean, literally the first year of the company, we made like $8,000. I mean, that's how bad it was. We had a website and we started with a website and that's what we did. And the next year it was only like $40,000 or $50,000. And then finally we broke the 100,000 and ended up with like 400,000 and then went to 1 million and then 4 million and then 49 million, literally like two years later. So it was kind of a hockey stick from a percentage perspective, but from an income perspective, really tough. I didn't have an income for at least the first 3 years. And luckily I had, a 401k and I had some investments and right. I had a home and I was able to weather that storm and get some really good people in the building that were really smart and really knew how to deal with these types of things and really help. So one of the biggest things I would advise any entrepreneur is surround yourself with great people. The team's what it's all about. If you think you can do it by yourself, that's going to be a pretty tough road. So.
That's funny. The farther along that I get, the more that I can confirm what you're saying is true. The skills related to recruiting, leadership, management become so much more important as you kind of grow as an entrepreneur. So very cool. And one of kind of the, I guess, key points that you're discussing in the growth of the company was the release of the iPhone, which was huge, I'm sure, for you guys. And you had already been doing this for several years. You had experience, you had manufacturing, you had supply chain all under your belt. And then boom, this need for screen protectors explodes. What was that like? Were there a lot of competitors in the market like there are today? Or were you kind of uniquely positioned to just skyrocket from this? What was that like?
Yeah, the two big competitors were Belkin and Fellows. And they're still around today. And those two great companies. mammoth companies. And, you know, so the nice thing about it was the internet was new. And I had previous experience during the dot-com boom and bust. I was an executive at a dot-com. And so I understood the challenges that existed with using, you know, credit cards on the internet and, you know, cost per click and all those models. I was part of those in the early days. And so I understood a little bit more maybe about, you know, the transactional side of the business and as it grew, what consumers would really demand and how we could get into, you know, different retail outlets and which ones really should be, we should be in and was able to avoid a lot of the pitfalls. My company that I started prior to this one that I mentioned was 4 years before I got into speech company was a rep firm, for lack of a better term. My expertise is in channel marketing, so I could get into these retailers. That's why I worked at the speech company. It was what my career was. And so I had some relationships there. And so, you know, starting when the iPhone came out, I was literally the first person in line at our local one here to get this iPhone. The second person in line was one of my main competitors. He was with a company called Invisible Shield. They're today known as Zag. A much bigger company than we are. But we both had to acquire this thing because we literally had to make the screen protector that day and ship out orders that were online that we had because people were expecting to have their product protected. So we had some uniquely positioned abilities with respect to understanding where the consumer was and how to get to them. That has since grown dramatically, obviously. We're in a much different world 20 years later on getting mind share of the consumer. But back then, retail was really big, huge. I mean, that's where we did. And we did a little bit of business online, but the majority of it was in retail.
Cool. And I think important to note, it's not just timing with your business model and your product, but timing with your particular skill set. And not just timing, but alignment. Like you were able to get in those retail stores. You understood online. So during the internet boom from like 2000 to 2010, when everyone was like mass adopting it, you were able to sell to them where they were spending their time. I think that's super important.
It was really cool. We had tons of little startup internet companies too, right? And us being small and establishing relationships, I mean, I can remember early days, you know, there were mobile device specific sites like accessories for mobile devices. And today that's Amazon, you know?
Right. Now it's all kind of consolidated.
It's consolidated. But back then it was specialty and it was really cool. And just for the iPhone, right? Accessories just for the iPhone. So it was a very unique kind of environment to grow up in and to try and understand and learn a lot of the you know, pitfalls that would occur down the road.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the evolution of the business. iPhones come out. I'm sure competitors spring up everywhere because need has gone way up. What do you do as an entrepreneur, as a leader, to separate yourself from the upcoming competition and continue to increase your sales channels? Like what is adopt an Amazon strategy, adopt a D2C or D2C strategy? What have you done to kind of work with the changes in the environment?
Yeah, it's really been interesting to adapt to. Each year it's different, right? And so early on, the iPhone changed the entire industry, right? Mm-hmm. Prior to this, flip phones had plastic screens on them, you know, an iPhone brought in glass for the first time. It was like, oh, this is the coolest device. It actually was a true smartphone. As you mentioned, you were using, you know, a flip phone. That was really just to call people. And occasionally send text. The old Blackberries and how hard it was. And Blackberry came out with a little keyboard on the screen. And Apple completely revolutionized that, obviously, with touchscreen. I mean, touchscreen on a phone, that was never heard of, which, again, propelled this need for screen protection and interaction with the screen. Ideal timing for us and the ability to protect that and keep people, you know, from breaking their device. So innovation was really important along with these channels and understanding how to sell it. As I mentioned before, we were making these micro innovations in the different types of materials that were used. In 2006, we launched Bodyguards, which is the name of the product that we're focusing on today, the majority of it, but it was a full body wrap. It actually went around the whole body of the device. And then it wasn't until 2012, as we used different materials and explored different materials, that we actually came out with the original glass screen protector. That's when this company hit the inflection point. We weren't the first to invent glass. I don't want people to think that. We were the first to bring it to market. And we had been working on it for over 2 years with a Korean manufacturer. When the first glass stuff started coming out, it was, you'd break it and it was shards of glass. It was like, okay, we can't sell this. This is going to hurt somebody, right? And we came up with tempering it and doing all the stuff that created this usability. So that was the inflection point. And at that point, we won a CES Innovations Award in 2013, January of 2013. And then finally, our biggest partner came on, which was AT&T. They took the risk. Now, they had the iPhone. Back then, it was only AT&T that sold the iPhone. It's an interesting probably data point is that Apple exclusively launched with AT&T. Now, at this point in 2013, obviously Verizon and others had it. But early on, that first 4 years, AT&T was owning that iPhone space. And so we had been trying to court AT&T for a long time. But we were always too small. I mean, there were too big of players. It was hard to risk. We didn't know whether we could handle the type of supply chain demands that would occur with someone like AT&T. And so it was really wonderful when they gave us a shot. And then AT&T was the first to introduce glass. I mean, it was us and AT&T. And then literally 8 months later, it went from a pretty much a blue ocean to a red ocean that fast when competitors that had larger distribution, like a Zag, got into glass screen protection, and it became much more competitive at that point.
Right. And I think that's going to be the fear of a lot of people that go into consumer electronics or live in here, is that if you do have a good idea, like you clearly had with the glass, then if it works, you're at very high risk for being impersonated with having that idea stolen. Did you ever think, I'm sure you did, so just walk me through the process of, we've got this awesome idea, we're working with the manufacturer, we're implementing this thing. Was there any reason that you couldn't get intellectual property protection on that? And have you ever had intellectual property protection in a consumer electronics idea that has been beneficial for you guys?
Yeah, it was really, that's a great point. When the materials we were using, we couldn't patent. You have Dow Corning, you have all these guys that are in glass, and there was just no way. We tried. Really tried the process.
I'm sure you tried.
But the one thing we could was the installation method, right? And so how you install this on a phone, which was the really number one, inhibitor for people in screen protectors, is like, how do I put this thing on straight? And so they'd go into a store or a kiosk in the mall or whatever and say, okay, you put it on for me. I'm paying this much money. I need you to put it on and put it on straight. So we came out with a patented, protection as far as installation trays. And we have continued to evolve those installation trays to the point where, in our latest product, we're working on a video where a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old will actually install a screen protection on a phone. It's that easy. It really is that easy now to do. And it was back then. But we, in our minds, say, oh, this is too difficult. I can't get this right. So we initially and from the very beginning have taken the consumer to mind and said, okay, what's this experience like? It's not just about the product. It's about the experience of the product and how I use the product. And even down to the point of, what if this thing breaks? How does a consumer deal with a screen protector breaking, which they're designed to do to take the hit so that the phone screen doesn't break, right? So we introduced an advantage program, which was lifetime replacements. The ability to, if once you break it, send it back in and we'll send you a new one. So we had to, really be nimble and be able to understand what are the different issues that are going to occur, what does a consumer need, and how do we get to that consumer? So that's how we've kind of kept our, we call it micro innovation and keeping ahead. The latest thing we did this year was we were the first to introduce a sustainable screen protector, where 30% of our glass is actually recycled glass. We were able to get with TUV Rhineland and over a year ago and get certified. They're the international experts on sustainability. We recognize that, hey, this is, we're selling millions and millions of these screen protectors. And
Right.
I need to be responsible for that. So we took the industry to another level by doing that. Now you're seeing the big players get this kind of certification and do that. It's tough. It's always tough to find your place in an industry. But we've found ours. And while we don't have the massive distribution that some of these bigger players do, we're working on it. We have great relationships. It takes time. And the way we move is these innovations. And we're, you know, continuing. We have a new screen protector coming out that you'll hear about in the next few months. It's just phenomenal. It's the best thing ever released from a glass perspective. So anyway, it's a fun industry. It's always changing. And I don't want you to think that's all we do is screen protectors. We do cases as well. And we do some other fun accessories.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of R&D, a lot of experimentation, which is great for the size and volume that you guys are at. What percentage of your revenue, how much do you allocate per year? What's the size of your team that does the R&D stuff?
It's probably around 10% now, as far as R&D is concerned. We continue to develop and co-develop. COVID has been a really difficult thing. Most of our products are created in China. We have Vietnamese manufacturing as well now because of some of the issues with tariffs. And it's a different – consumer electronics is a tough space financially. As you grow and as you establish as a serious competitor in the industry – there's a massive amount of margin pressure. And so, like I said, we had to move from Korea to China. And once in China, once it started becoming a red ocean, everybody was claiming they could get these screen protection products for dirt cheap. And so the amount of investment you put in there, you have to continue to create really differentiation because for lack of a better analogy, it's like buying toilet paper nowadays. You know, people think it's the same, but there is a difference between a Charmin and a Kirtland brand. But to the average consumer, they're not willing to pay, right, that delta. They just say that's good enough. And so we find ways to, you know, work directly with our consumer. Obviously, the internet and websites and Amazon have given us tremendous, you know, microphones to be able to get the word out that there is a big difference when you're talking about protecting a $1,500 product and how it's protected and your experience with that protection. So that's kind of the game we've turned it into. And we're with really reputable partners that are trusted and working out different models on how to sell those effectively to the consumer.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk a little bit about the supply chain. As you mentioned, now it's coming out of a couple different countries. And what kind of volume of units are you doing? Just to put it into context for everyone, how many units are you sending out per year?
Yeah, last year I think we've done about 8 million units, somewhere in that ballpark, 8.5 million units. So it's pretty significant, and supply chain has been an absolute nightmare for us. You think about our products, it's nice that it comes over in a container. Most of our products, we have to fly because of the nature of devices, right? Devices come out, and then they're gone. And you just don't have 3 months to sit on the water and wait and hope, you know, you can get in the right timing. So you deal a lot with air versus boat. But you do try and get a lot of it on boat, you know, and so you have to work through your supply chain. You have to have really great experts on your team that can handle those kind of inventory adjustments as they come and forecasting all that type of stuff. So, and when you're dealing with really small dollar products, which we are, it becomes even more of a challenge, at least from my personal experience. The larger dollar items are better if they're small, obviously. But if, you know, I'd hate to be in let's say the barbecue market and trying to send those things over in a container and how heavy they are. And, you know, those types of things have got to be very difficult, probably much more difficult than what we're dealing with. But it has been a real strain on us, dropped our margins from, you know, really good, healthy margins to less than, you know, 20%, maybe 10% margins during that time. But we had to deliver for our customers. We had to get it for them. We made commitments and contracts and promises. And we're able to get that done. So I'm proud of the team for the way they've navigated through that and continue to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And it sounds like you've already taken some steps to getting the most that you can out of the customers that you have, like the replacement. I don't know if it's free replacements or that's a subscription model, but it is, I guess, fortunately, an industry that is meant to be consumable. I'm sure the life time of a screen protector isn't short, but also people are going to need to buy new screen protectors as they crack, as they break, as you change phones. So is there anything that you've done, such as subscription or selling your customers and upselling them a case? What have you done to increase your bottom line on per customer lifetime value?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously the attach is really important to us. We want, if they're coming for a screen protector, we want them to buy a case. And for example, we created the Advantage program, which many years ago, which is lifetime replacement. So if you buy a screen protector from us, you're not going to have to pay for the product. You are going to have to pay for the shipping. So it's minimal amount, but you get a free protector. You can have it come back to you and deliver right to your home. That's a real convenience. But if you attach a case, it's totally free. So for the life of your device. So those types of programs where, you know, now I'm not paying for shipping or anything. I just call up or email us or send us a message or text message, and we go ahead and send that out to you. So it's all about the consumer from our perspective. It's about meeting their demands, meeting their needs where they are. And that's a huge issue that's changing. I've been a channel marketing person. I really believe in retail. I still to this day love retail. But retail isn't what it was 20 years ago today. Online is where everybody's at. And now our biggest challenge is trying to get to those consumers. Where are they? Where are they buying their phones? Most attach comes when they buy their phone, right? So if they're on Apple.com buying it, they're probably attaching a case at that point. Now, how do we get to those people? How do we let them know that our offering is superior to what they're purchasing, and we have better programs? And so I'm super excited about the team and the programs we have running and the dynamic changes that are occurring to be able to continue to adapt to where that consumer is.
Absolutely. What kind of products are you doing cases for? I'm curious because last week I bought a screen protector for my Tesla. I'm wondering, because we're all on screens now. Everything's got a screen. I mean, my camera pointing at me right now has a screen on it. My camera's got a screen on it. What kind of range of products do you guys protect?
Yeah, we used to have 3,600 different SKUs in the early days. And that's how you kind of kept going, was that you had these custom designed screen protectors for, you know, digital cameras where nobody was playing, right? And you could find a space. And so, but we've really narrowed it down on our device side to really Apple and Samsung, some Motorola devices, those types of devices. So, you know, it's really always has been those devices have done, 80% of the revenue, and the others do 20%. But we do iPads, MacBooks. We even have cases for AirPods, those types of things. So, we're pretty close, knit in the Apple community, but have a really good Samsung line as well. And the majority of people right now are on those two different devices. That's the lion's share of it. So we've had to focus to become more efficient and cost aware on.
Right. I can't imagine devices. 2,000 different SKUs of a product with a manufacturer. And man, that's crazy. That's a nightmare. So that makes a lot of sense. Figure out where your best sellers are and become the best. Cool. Yeah, exactly. Any exciting products being released that you want to talk about or that might be interesting?
As I mentioned earlier, we have all of our products are sustainable. And personally, I feel very responsible there. We need to be better as an industry. I mean, just think about, we've sold over 35 million units of our products. And I just think about the landfills and what's going on with that. So in the early days, it really wasn't that big of a deal to me. The last 5 or 6 years, it's a big deal. I want my kids and my grandkids to live in a wonderful world. And so I got to take some personal responsibility. So I'm very proud of the team. And all of our cases are sustainable cases. They're made from sustainable materials that either can be recycled or composted. Our screen protectors, like I said, 30%. This new Pure 3 that we launched this year for the new Apple devices, is also available for the 13s, is phenomenal. It's responsible. It's the best screen protector we've ever done. It's 5 times stronger than any screen protector, and it has real advantages. So those are the things I'm really excited about now. And now it's, hopefully the industry continues to follow. We're seeing more and more people get into the sustainable market. And I just wish the consumers could elevate as well. I recognize, you know, you don't want to pay more for the products. I get that from a consumer perspective, but the costs are real. It is a different cost to do sustainable materials. Hopefully someday it will be equal. And I think we're seeing some of that progress, but I love companies like Apple and others that are really taking a stance and moving forward with real sustainability and in a real way, not just marketing, but in a real right. way. And that's what I'm probably most proud of with our company in the last few years and the strides we've made. Not an easy thing to do, especially when you're dealing with getting products right. out in the right timing and those types of things, but pushing those issues and making sure your development gets it done in a proper amount of time. So super proud of that.
Yeah. Me too. And I want to acknowledge you for doing that. I know it can be tough as a business owner to sacrifice some of your margins to do the right thing and use recycled materials. I will tell you that my generation and generations after me are going to appreciate it probably a lot more than you'd expect. And I can see buying behaviors shifting based on who's the responsible ones and who's not. So if you're listening to this, go buy bodyguards because we need more people like you in consumer electronics. The waste that is produced can be astronomical. I'm sure you know much better than me how many landfills get filled every year by old electronics.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course. And Kirk, for those listening that wanted to learn a little bit more, buy a case, connect with you, where's the best place to do that?
For this brand, we've been talking about bodyguards.com. If you want to learn more about the company, it's bgzbrands.com. We have three different brands. We have Bodyguards, Lander, and Moxio. But Bodyguards is our biggest brand, and it's the one that's really been carrying this company for a long time. So visit bodyguards.com with a Z. So bodyguards with a Z.
Gotcha. And if you're listening or watching, you won't have to look far. It's going to be right down there in the show notes or the description. And Kirk, it was a blast chatting with you today. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for leading the pack in consumer electronics responsibility. I hope more companies follow. And like I said, if you're listening, go buy a bodyguard. Check it out. Kirk, thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate the opportunity.